Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Can AI help languages getting left behind? Today on Advanced. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's advanced program. I'm Linda, your host. Today is August 21st, and we are looking at our technology article. It is entitled, The Languages Getting Left Behind. So we're going to be talking about languages and AI, technology, and I'm glad to welcome Peter to the program for today and tomorrow. We'll be talking about this. Welcome, Peter.
Hello, Linda. Hello, everyone. Nice to be here.
Yeah, so languages is in our title, and we will be talking about the world's dying languages, like how AI can possibly help solve that problem. But let's start off with just talking about languages in general. Well, we're all language learners here. I mean, all of our listeners, everyone in the studio, we've all been language learners at some point or are currently learning a language. And I want to ask you, what languages do you know or have attempted to learn?
Well, I've made a lifelong study of English. I think I'm pretty competent there. As a second language, I've studied French. I wouldn't say I've learned it, but I could speak it to save my life, as they say.
So just English and French.
English and French and Unk.
What's that?
Do you know Unk? Unk is a lunkangwunkage. Unkin wunkage. You plunk a runkound wunketh vunka wunkards.
Is that Pig Latin?
It's a form of Pig Latin, yeah. Basically, you just add the word unk, which means nothing. It's just three letters. You put unk before every vowel in each word. Yanku punkut unk unk. Bunky funkor unkich vunkal unkin unkich wunkard.
And so
you have to find someone else who speaks it, of course. But no, seriously, you may remember a children's show growing up in the United States called Zoom. Maybe, maybe not. It was on public television. But one day they taught a language called Ubby Dubby, which was the same thing. You put ub instead of unk. But that was kind of a way to teach young kids how to have their own, you know, language maybe they could share with each other and the adults wouldn't necessarily know what they were saying.
Right, until they figured it out.
Yeah. So it's not a language tied to a particular culture or race of people. It's just a sort of linguistic parlor trick.
So basically a fake language.
If you want fake is kind of a strong term.
A
made up language.
Yeah. But you mentioned language being representative of people, culture, race, and my native language is English, but I've studied Spanish. I studied that for a long time in school. And then when I was in Africa, I did learn the dialect there called Oshivambo in Namibia. And then I learned some other dialects when I traveled there, but I probably put the most time in learning Oshiwambo because that's where I lived for a while. And then Chinese, which has been my most recent the language that I've been trying to learn for the past decade or so. And language is not easy to learn. Like it's especially when languages are so different, like English and Chinese. They're just big differences, so it makes it a bit more challenging. But I have learned that when you learn a language, that language of the culture or the society that you're in, it really helps to understand the people there, the culture there. And I find learning languages really opens my mind because it just does. Like you think in a different way, like you're not just thinking in one way, in one language. And so you can better understand people, especially people who are trying to speak your language, like seeing it from their perspective. Like now I understand, okay, why in this language, or speaking English, they would use this sort of grammar pattern or switch around the words? Oh, because in their language, this is how it works. I think it's always a good thing to try to learn languages. It's just, it's a challenge. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
Especially as you get older. Yeah. And some of us are more linguistically inclined. You know, there's some
Absolutely.
People who pick up languages like it's nothing,
yeah.
you know, like just snap of their fingers, you know, they yep. can learn a language, but we all are not like that. Most of us are not like that. So we have to put a lot of time and effort.
At least not as adults. Almost all children can learn languages much more easily than an adult can.
Right. Yes. Yeah, I'm talking about as adults.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will be talking about languages getting left behind. And what does it mean to get left behind?
It means to not go along with the group, to not be included, to be left in the back.
To be forgotten,
left behind.
Right?
To be forgotten, sure.
Yeah.
Any number of ways you could describe it.
Mm-hmm. So these are languages that maybe not so many people speak. They include indigenous languages, tribal languages. And so our deck here asks this question, can AI help save the world's dying languages? So that is what we are going to explore in today's article. So let's begin with our first reading now.
The languages getting left behind. Can AI help save the world's dying languages? The United Nations estimates that some 40% of languages spoken around the world face extinction. Can artificial intelligence slow this trend? As much as global tech giants like to think so, the reality is not that simple. Generative AI tools have shown remarkable gains in breaking down language and cultural barriers. But there are major gaps when it comes to understanding so-called low-resource languages, such as indigenous and regional dialects at risk of dying out, which lack meaningful digital representation. A report from Stanford's Institute for Human-Centered Artificial Intelligence found that most major large language models, or LLMs, underperform in non-English and especially in resource-scarce vernacular.
Okay, so what do we learn from the United Nations?
Right, well, the United Nations, right here at the top, estimates that some 40% of languages spoken around the world face extinction. To face something means you're in danger of it. You're looking it right in the face, you might say. And so, in this case, figuratively speaking, 40% of languages face extinction. And just for context, there are about roughly 7,100 languages currently spoken in the world today. 40% of that, that's in the neighborhood of about 2,800 languages.
That is a lot. That is a huge number, 40% of languages that could just disappear. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're slowly disappearing today. So how can we stop this trend? And that's where artificial intelligence comes in. So we think that, oh, well, AI could maybe fix all of our problems. Like,
yes.
It's definitely helped with language learning and translation. Now, all of us can do translation like in whatever language that we want with the use of AI. So it's helped a lot in languages, but can it slow this trend? So we go on to see that as much as global tech giants like to think so, the reality is not that simple. Generative AI tools have shown remarkable gains in breaking down language and cultural barriers, like you mentioned, but there are major gaps when it comes to understanding so-called low-resource languages. And they give some examples, indigenous languages, regional dialects. These are included in this category of low-resource languages. But can you describe what a low-resource language is?
Well, I'm not a linguist, of course, but a low-resource language is a language that lacks meaningful digital representation or probably digital, meaningful non-digital representation. A low-resource language would simply mean a language for which there is not as much information or mm-hmm. data or, right. you know, people speaking it to properly understand it.
Yeah. So specifically the data that is available in these languages or with these languages, like with these languages in mind. So if they're low resource languages, then they're also high resource languages, right?
Right, right.
And we can probably guess what the high resource languages are. This is this includes the languages that have the most data out there in the language. And you can probably guess what the number one is.
Yeah, I'll take a shot at English.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Number two, probably Chinese. And number three, perhaps Hindi, if that's a language. It is, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah. So that Hindi, there are 500 million speakers of Hindi. So it ranks up there.
It's in the top
in
five.
Having the number of speakers. And you would think, okay, high resource language probably correlates, is connected to the number of people speaking it. But in this case, it isn't.
Is that right?
Hindi is actually a low resource language, just because even though there are 500 or half a billion people speaking it, there isn't as much data on there, like it's written information that's available. So that's what makes it low resources.
That wouldn't have anything to do with any economic factors, would it?
Probably. Well, all of those factors that contribute there not being, having as much data in these languages.
Right. It's not just number of speakers alone that determines the resources of it. There's other factors.
But for the most part, it does correlate to the number of speakers for the most part.
For the most part.
Yeah. But in terms of, like Western European languages, they will have hierarchy. They will have more resources, just like French opposed to Hindi. French speakers, the average numbers are around 100 million speakers in the world, but it's a high resource language just because there's much more data available in French.
Right. Portuguese is probably a high resource language, even though
I didn't look up Portuguese, but Spanish is definitely
Spanish. Okay. High
resource language. And if you want to know, some of the mid-resource languages include Greek, Urdu, and Dutch. But low-resource languages also include Norwegian and Dutch.
Oh.
Sorry, Danish. Danish. Uh-huh. Because they're just a lower number of speakers who speak those languages. So that was just, interesting. So, but we're looking at these low-resource languages because they're the ones most at risk of dying out, and they lack a meaningful digital representation. So we go on to learn from a report from Stanford's Institute for Human-Centered Artificial Intelligence. What did they find?
They found that most major large language models, or those LLMs that we've all become so familiar with now, most of them underperform in non-English, in languages other than English, and especially do they underperform in resource-scarce, low-resource, vernacular. Good word there, vernacular, mm-hmm. meaning a form of language that ordinary people use, but that is not really the official language. An example would be in English, in the United States, in the American South, you'll hear the expression y'all. What time are y'all coming over? And it's a contraction of you and all. But that's not really taught in any grammar books. In the grammar books, you would learn you all. What time are you all coming over? So you could say that's an example of vernacular. It's a variation, but it's not a completely different language or a completely different grammar.
Right. So it can be regional or limited to a particular group that speaks this way. Yet here, vernacular is more general, like in reference to a language. So a language that is scarce in resources, low resource language that we're talking about here. Right. And we mentioned before that English is the highest, right? So let's learn more about that in our next reading.
The drawback of English dominance. This erosion is not only a cultural loss, but a technological blind spot. At the heart of the issue is a lack of quality data. The most powerful LLMs require gargantuan troves of training material, the vast majority of which is in English. Researchers have long lamented how this can result in AI tools homogenizing culture and perpetuating Anglo-centric viewpoints. But there is more at stake when one language becomes dominant. Even for AI models that offer multilingual capabilities, it often requires more tokens or units of data processing to respond to the same prompts in languages other than English. This can become expensive. Combined with lower quality performance, it risks having swaths of communities sidelined from digital life as the technologies are integrated into more facets of the economy, education, and healthcare.
So we can blame the British Empire, either blame or thank the British Empire for the dominance of the English language, right? Because they spread English all around the world.
Yeah.
So for us English speakers, it's great, you know, because we can go to so many places and just use English. But there are drawbacks. And here we get into one when it comes to like high resource, low resource, and the digital representation. So this erosion is not only a cultural loss, but a technological blind spot. So we mentioned earlier that language is so closely tied with culture, right? It's a representation of culture. And so if these languages are dying, then we're also losing that culture. And we know what blind spots are, right? Blind spot.
Right. We think of it, I think, most when we're driving a car. Every car has a blind spot, which is to say a place, a location on or around the car where you can't see traffic coming up behind you or to the side of you. So you have to always make sure your rear view mirrors are adjusted properly. These days, in fact, mainly blind spots are becoming a thing of the past because cars often come with video cameras nowadays that can give you a complete 360-degree view of every possible point around your car. But before those, you had these so-called blind spots where you just couldn't see.
Right. And it's still a blind spot is a point or like a location which you can't see that you are or unaware of. So here we're talking about technological blind spots. So these aspects of technology that we're unaware of or we can't see clearly. Right. So at the heart of the issue is a lack of quality data. The most powerful LLMs require gargantuan troves of training material. This word gargantuan, I think you can probably guess what it means just from the sound of it.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Lots.
Enormous.
Yeah.
Godzilla.
So lots of training material. And this word trove just means amount, large amounts. So large amounts of training material. That is what they require, the LLMs. So the vast majority of which is in English.
Right. All these troves of training material is mostly in English.
Mm-hmm. So researchers have lamented how this can result in AI tools homogenizing culture and perpetuating Anglo-centric viewpoints. So let's break this down.
Yeah.
So when you lament something, you kind of regret it, right? You grieve it or like you mourn it. So researchers regret how this can result in AI tools homogenizing culture. What does it mean to homogenize something?
Yeah, well, to homogenize something, kind of a long word, just means to make it the same as something else or as everything else.
Right. It's homo, same, that prefix. And perpetuate Anglo-centric viewpoints.
Right. Perpetuate means to make something, a situation or an attitude, but really anything to perpetuate something is to make it continue to exist.
Right.
Usually the word is used in reference to something that you don't want to continue to exist, but it can be used in a more neutral sense as well, just to make something continue to exist.
Right. And we're being caused to continue these Anglo-centric viewpoints. So Anglo-centered. Anglo-Saxon, that is a reference to English.
White, European,
yes,
basically.
But basically it means white now. So the white viewpoint.
Yeah.
But there's more at stake when one language becomes dominant, right? There's more at risk, right, with English becoming like so dominant, or one language becoming so dominant. Even for AI models that offer multilingual capacities, it often requires more tokens or units of data processing to respond to the same prompts in languages other than English. So tokens are what you need, right, to operate, to get information results from AI. So it's going to cost more in non-English languages, so that becomes more expensive. So combined with lower quality performance, it risks what?
It risks having swaths of communities sidelined from digital life. I love that word, swath. It means a large, in context here, it just means a large area mm-hmm. of something, a swath of something, not just a narrow bit here or there, but a swath. Swaths of communities of people sidelined from digital life, meaning excluded from.
Right. And it's a sports reference, right? If you are sidelined,
exactly.
You're not in the playing area.
You're not playing. You're on the sidelines.
So you're
on the side.
Outside, right? Now. So they don't get to be part of or don't have this digital life, this as the technologies are integrated into more facets of life, basically, the economy, education, healthcare.
Right.
Okay. All right. Let's hear our third reading now.
A safety issue for all. But these issues go beyond digital exclusion or deepening inequalities. Research has found that low-resource languages can be used to jailbreak safety guardrails in AI tools. Another study found that it's not just the speakers who are vulnerable. Anyone can translate prompts, such as how to make a bomb or plan a terrorist attack, into low-resource speech and exploit vulnerabilities. Major AI companies have worked to patch these exposures in updates. But OpenAI has admitted that, even in English, safeguards can become less reliable during longer interactions. It makes AI's multilingual blind spots everyone's issue.
So with the dominance of one language, there is a loss of culture, there is inequality in digital representation. But this last section talks about a danger that affects everyone, not
right.
just low-resource languages. So it's a safety issue for all. These issues go beyond digital exclusion or deepening inequalities. What has research found?
Right. It's found that low-resource languages, what we've been talking about all the time here, can be used to jailbreak safety guardrails in AI tools. Jailbreak, a sort of new way of saying what we used to say, hack, which is to make changes to a piece of technology so that you can use it in a way that was not intended by the company or the person who first made it. And they use jailbreak here, I think, instead of hack, because there's this sense that this is a change that is for the worse, or a change that is deliberately against the original intention of the product.
Right, right. So it goes against what you're supposed to do,
right?
But it has become pretty common because I remember having to jailbreak phones like so you could use it like in a different network or something, like to be able to use a SIM card. So this concept has been around.
Right, but the fact that it's jailbreak, you know, that tells you something about the morality of it.
Yeah, so it's doing something you're not supposed to be doing or not within the confines of what it was made to do. So another study found that it's not just the speakers who are vulnerable. Anyone can translate prompts, such as how to make a bomb or plan a terrorist attack, into low-resource speech and then exploit those vulnerabilities. So it's misusing, right, these low-resource languages to take advantage, right? To use that to expose these vulnerabilities and then take advantage of those blind spots.
Right. I mean, it's basically like talking in Unk, talking in a language that the people watching you don't know. And so you can speak more freely because in this case, the quote people watching you is the AI tool itself, and it doesn't have all the data on this weird language you're using to follow what you're saying, and so it won't trigger the safety guardrails or anything like that.
Exactly. And so major AI companies have worked to patch these exposures in updates, but AI has admitted that even in English, safeguards can become less reliable during longer interactions. So in the world of technology, right, patch means to fix. Like, you get sent these packages through updates to address these issues. And here, it's these vulnerabilities that they're addressing. But they're also, even English, like, the safeguards break down during longer interactions. And unfortunately, like we've seen in the news, what happens like in long interactions with AI, it starts to say crazy stuff.
Right.
You know?
If you just persist with it, it will begin to change its answers a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't follow the normal safety guidelines. So that becomes a danger for everyone. So it makes AI's multilingual blind spots everyone's issue. So it's something we all need to be concerned about. Fortunately, we have to end our program because we've run out of time, but we do continue tomorrow. So please come back to listen to the second day of this article. For now, I'm Linda.
I'm Peter.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.